Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Another week, another episode of Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up today, a magnificent seven dwarfs the non-entities of Norwich, the Carabao Cup reaches round four, England on target for England, and a little bit more besides. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Well, that was a good weekend, wasn't it? Here to talk through the demolition of Norwich City are two of The Athletic's finest, Dominic Fifield.
Good morning, Matt.
And Simon Johnson.
Hello.
Hello. Let's get to Saturday then, shall we?
Goes Loftus-Cheek with a powerful run. Looks for the return. Beautifully played by Ziyech. Mounts in the middle on a hat-trick. Barkley further across. Loftus-Cheek. Mount. Hat-trick. Chelsea have seven.
It's my job to find solutions. And then on the pitch, it's the guys who need to prove that they are capable of playing on this kind of level, and they still need to prove. This was only one game. We did very, very well today. That's why I'm happy.
It was a good day. Special day, definitely, to score a hat-trick here at the Bridge. I don't think I've ever scored more than one goal for Chelsea, so to get three in a game after, I think, 25 games I just saw that I didn't score, it's a great feeling. But most importantly, seven goals, you don't really see that often, and to get a clean sheet, the way we performed today, mentality-wise, we was top class.
Chelsea 7, Norwich 0 at Stamford Bridge then. The Blues recording their second biggest win in Premier League history and forcing the Vidi printer to spell it out. Simon, like me, you were on hand at Stamford Bridge for this game. We'll get to Chelsea and we'll give them loads and loads of praise, but I just wonder, have you ever seen a poorer performance from an opposition team than this?
Well, since Malmo.
they were a bit worse than Malmo, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, pack your bags for the championship. I know Norwich are very sensitive about the kind of criticism they've been getting, and we touched on this on the preview show. But when you see the likes of Brentford and Sheffield United and Leeds in their first seasons in the Premier League sort of really add something and give it a go and look like they're ready to compete. And then you see Norwich and you just go, it's like throwing in the towel already. It's difficult because you don't want to take away from Chelsea's performance, but it was, I bet Lukaku was sitting there going, oh, for goodness sake. the time of my injury, I could have got a hat-trick quite comfortably against this lot and then ease some of the doubters. Because, yeah, it was just pathetic. And Daniel Farker looked like he didn't really have much of an idea of how to change things or provide damage limitation. It was just a complete meek surrender.
Don, we thought that this was the start of a good run of games for Chelsea, starting with Malmo. That's really the way that it's proved so far, 11 goals without reply in the space of a couple of weeks. And maybe more importantly here, people getting on target who hadn't before. Most specifically, Mason Mount, obviously, his first Chelsea hat-trick. And he was really due a goal. Real Madrid in the Champions League semi-final is his last one before Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely right. That was the big benefit to Chelsea, other than the boost of the goal difference and the, you know, maintaining that position at the top of the table. This was an opportunity to bring people into form against utterly hapless opponents who provided them with the space to do what they want to do. And the hope is that, you know, if the likes of Mount find their range, and I mean, Hudson-Odoi can be thrown into that as well. Even Loftus-Cheek as an attacking force when he came on late on with that burst for the, was it for the seventh goal or the, I can't even remember. I lost count at that point. Yeah. They're bringing people that have maybe not flattered to deceive, because Loftus-Cheek has done well, but they just wanted that thing just to take them to the next level, just to sort of remind themselves of the quality, the attacking qualities that they've got. Mount had spoken in the build-up about how he should be scoring more goals. He needed to find that ruthless edge again, and you know, here come Norwich just to open the doors to him. Basically, you go, just help yourself. And that was great to see. Some great finishes in there. I thought the first one was actually a brilliant finish, fantastically crisply struck, and it just provides everybody with a lift after the sort of recent stutters. Yeah, they're getting back into some rhythm and upbeat tempo to their game again. And you know, when the next big test comes along, and looking at, I mean, I think Newcastle will be tough. I watched Newcastle on Saturday. They're very defensive all of a sudden now, so it'll be difficult breaking them down potentially this weekend. But you know, the next big game that Chelsea, the next big challenge they face, whether that be Juventus possibly in the Champions League, I think they should go into that game with a lot more belief and conviction and more used to playing in this upbeat manner.
Yeah, I was thinking the next big game might be Manchester United at home next month, but maybe not.
Come on. No.
This weekend. So at halftime, it was Cobham 3, Norwich 0. Simon, the subject of your post-match piece was those academy grads and how Thomas Tuchel's used them. You know, we've rightly, and you have, given a lot of praise to Frank Lampard for the job he did of integrating them. But it is worth pointing out that it's not like they've been cast aside since Tuchel took charge.
Yeah, I just thought it was a point worth making, because I just remember it being a real stick to beat Lampard with, in particular, that, oh, he's only doing this because of the transfer ban, it won't last. Chelsea will cast them aside. They'll go and buy loads of players, which they have done. But these guys have shown that they're good enough, and Tuchel is benefiting from Lampard's work and trust in these guys. But he's still picking them, and I just thought that was a point worth making. It was the story of the day. You had to sort of write about the academy in some way, because they were predominantly responsible for the scoreline. But I just thought it was worth sort of noting that here we are 2 years later, and sort of a lot of the faces that made the breakthrough at Chelsea are still contributing now. And of course, Tuchel was added to that list by bringing Trevor Chalobah into the group. And it's not a complete sort of, oh, the academy rules the roost at Chelsea now, because we saw in the summer that quite a few of the hot prospects left, but they're still playing a part, and I think it's something that should be celebrated.
Dom, did you have a favourite goal of the seven? I think the Reece James dink was probably my favourite. Mount's first was pretty good too. Even Callum's finish from that lovely Kovacic pass, which seems to be becoming a thing.
They're genuinely all blurred into one now in my head. I liked Ruben Loftus-Cheek's run, if I'm honest, but that was the one that gave me the most satisfaction. But I thought Mount's first, the crispness of that finish was superb, and I suppose, you know, on the basis that it was the first, you know, and that's. If Norwich were attempting to be stubborn, which clearly they don't have in their locker, but if they were attempting to do that, then the first is the most significant one, the one that punches all their optimism and belief. And so that opened the floodgates, basically. So it was probably the most significant. But I think just generally, a sort of rapturous, riotous performance was what was needed in the Premier League. And it really, it just set the tone for the weekend. I know Arsenal fans might disagree because they got the Friday night fixture, but it was a remarkable weekend's fixture card in the Premier League, and Chelsea scoring seven really, you know, it was set the marker for those at the top of the table, of which, in fairness, City and Liverpool responded.
Is there nothing like a, you're talking about hapless performance? Doesn't every sort of like to sort of say, you know, make it qualify as the hapless performance and woeful? Doesn't every one of those need a horrific own goal with that sort of cheer in the crowd, you know, and then you see the replay. I mean, that was a beauty. Poor old, it was kind of Aaron's, you felt sorry for him, and then and then Tim Krul sort of, it was comedy, pure comedy.
Even Max Ahrens is from West London, isn't he? is he from Hammersmith, I think? So it's another one to add to the...
he just wanted to chip in on the English goal scoring spree. But in all seriousness, I sort of did sort of make a point of tweeting about it that, of course, didn't know what Man City and Liverpool were going to do, but goal difference. You know, I know it's early in the season, but I put it this way, you don't want a significant gap to build, like if Liverpool and City ran away with like the goal difference. So I thought that was good for Chelsea to whack on 7 goals onto their goals for column. But for that reason, it just, you don't want to sort of think, oh, we're technically a point off because we've got an inferior goal difference.
And speaking of goals, 11 at home in a week and all without Romelu Lukaku. Andrew says, good week to discuss that awkward Lukaku issue of whether a pressing team looks better without a static reference point who doesn't move. He's our version of the Ronaldo at Juve problem. I'd say that last bit is probably a little bit harsh, Andrew. But it's an interesting point, Dom, isn't it? And obviously, Lukaku's going to come back into the team when he's fit again. I guess if you're glass half full, you're saying, well, Chelsea's spreading the goals around. What is it, 17 different scorers now, I think. If you're glass half empty, you're saying we'd like Lukaku to be getting more of them than he has done.
I look at it through envious eyes, basically, that to have that option of having a £97.5 million striker, one of the best in the world, currently getting a bit of a breather that you probably needed and ready to come back into the team, a team where the creative players should have up their game and form by the time he comes back in on the basis of what we saw Saturday. I suspect there'll be more of a supply line when he does come back into the team than there has been. I think he suffered for all that. I completely understand that the sort of, you know, the press and having to learn how to play with Lukaku and him having to adjust to how Chelsea want to play as well. That is an ongoing process and will be revisited. But it must have been difficult for him to play the first few weeks and months of his return to Chelsea alongside a lot of players who had lost form. Let's be honest, a lot of those number 10s and the creative players weren't playing at their potential. That's how, I mean, Mason Mount has not had the best of his seasons. I mean, there have been moments where he hasn't looked himself. Hudson-Odoi hasn't been in the team. Ziyech, Simon's written about Ziyech and his... He just hasn't looked at his best for some time. He was great in pre-season, but not so much since. And that you can extend that throughout. I mean, Kai Havertz, another one who hasn't really been showing, hasn't kicked on in the way that we expected he would do after the Champions League final. But by the time that Lukaku comes back in, I think a lot of those guys will look more like their former selves. And he may find that suddenly goals get laid on a plate for him. And if they're playing one as bad as Norwich, then he'll take those opportunities gleefully.
And it shouldn't be sort of forgotten that on Saturday, arguably, without sticking the boot in, but arguably Chelsea's most disappointing forward player, the defence obviously didn't have much to do, was Havertz playing. It's not like he had a
Liam's going to come for you, mate.
It's not like he had a this outstanding game that Lukaku... hasn't. It was the wide men, it was Hudson-Odoi, it was Mason Mount, it was the wing backs and Kovacic in particular that sort of really had that were largely responsible for those 7 goals. Havertz was actually, I thought, was a little bit disappointing. So I just think it's a bit lazy to sort of go, oh, Chelsea have won 7-0 against Norwich and that's exposed Lukaku as some kind of weak link. Yeah, I just think that's a bit too easy to come to that conclusion.
Speaking of sideline strikers, finally on the Norwich game, producer Lucy wants to know, what sweet would you give Timo Werner? You might have seen the footage of him turning his nose up at an orange wine gum. I've got to say, Timo, if you're going to come over here and live in England, you've got to embrace our culture, and wine gums are a big part of that. I think probably he might be a Werther's original kind of guy, Dom.
I had a little chat with the guy who was exchanging the... sweets with. I think it was a member of the Chelsea media team, if I'm right. Yeah, he just said, "Oh, sweet fun and games." Apparently, it's quite a common thing. What would we take? What would be a sweet that's brilliant in the build-up but not quite great?
I was going to say something that's hit and miss. Promises much, dissolves in your mouth, and then you go, "Oh, that's a bit." What about a coffee revel?
Oh, come off it! You can't beat a coffee revel.
You sort of go, "Oh, this could be a really nice one," and then go, "Oh no, it's coffee."
Sherbet dib dab, lots of fizz at the start, and then doesn't quite follow through.
One of those gobstoppers that's actually got bubble gum in the middle, which is really disappointing because no one actually really wants bubble gum, do they? And it's lovely. Oh, it's horrible now. This is not the way I expected this podcast to go. This isn't the highbrow. It was highbrow content that we were told.
No,
it was
this is my kind of subject. Yeah, let's. What else can we think of?
Well, look, Timo, maybe try the other flavours, see if they work out for you. But I'm a big wine gums guy, so it was really disappointing to see your reaction to those. Anyway, not too much time to bask in the glow of that victory for Chelsea. The Blues back in action on Tuesday. We'll look ahead to that after this.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Southampton visit Stamford Bridge for the second time this month when they head to West London to face Chelsea in the fourth round of the Carabao Cup. Now, I forgot to ask you two to pick a team for this, so I'll just read you mine instead and you can see what you think. This is what I'm going with. Kepa in goal, defence of Chiloba, Christensen and Saar. I'm having Reece James and Alonso as my wing-backs. Ruben and Saul in midfield with Ziyech, Havertz and Hudson-Odoi as a front three. Simon, have I missed off anybody obvious you should be featuring as part of this, I don't know, B-team lineup?
That's pretty close. I mean, you could probably have an argument for Ross Barkley, maybe. I thought, again, you know, with the limited minutes he had on Saturday, I really liked that turn, that sharp turn he did. And it was a good effort on goal, and Krull made a brilliant save. So there's an argument for Ross Barkley. Trying to think who else. I think you've
wonder whether Azpilicueta comes back in for Reece James just because he didn't play Saturday.
Just, yeah, the rotation. Yeah. There's an argument for that for sure. But yeah, that sounds reasonable. I mean, for Saul, he surely will play, and he really needs to play. Like, this will be appearance number four, I think. And he's yet to show anything. So it's important for him if he gets that chance. And Alonso, you know, he suddenly got to, he's now in the Ben Chilwell position. He's got to sort of, after a run of games, go, "Oh, right, I'm suddenly out of the team and I've got to show what I can do." It's a great battle between those two. Chilwell's almost gone, "Oh, Alonso scoring goals, I better become prolific to keep my place." Yeah, Tuchel's in a very luxurious position to have all these options.
But Havertz, Dom, is kind of the default nominal striker, isn't he? I was looking at the squad and thinking, are there any other options? And, you know, maybe last year you could have chucked a Jude Soonsup Bell onto the bench or something like that. But he's had injury problems at the start of the season and hasn't had the kind of impact that led to Simon to profile him for The Athletic last year. So really, it's Havertz or nobody in that position at the moment.
Yeah, and Tuchel made the point on Friday that it's unfortunate when a couple of injuries come, they come to basically in the same position. I mean, in Werner and Lukaku, but I don't think it shouldn't be an issue in terms of fitness for Havertz and for him to start this game. He came off against Norwich. He hadn't started that many games previously. He should be raring to go and sees this as an opportunity to get back on the on the score sheet and back leading the line in an effective way. I mean, he scored against Malmo last week, didn't he? So he's I suppose he's had that sensation recently, and he'll want more of it. This is an opportunity for him. Just take it. Show that you should be leading the line at St James's Park at the weekend as well. And then, you know, if you play well for an hour and Chelsea are comfortable against Southampton, then you can come off and Tuchel can play a false nine, or you can ask Hudson-Odoi to fill in there through the middle, or whatever. There'll be a way of getting through the last half hour of a League Cup tie midweek, because Havertz probably will be needed at Newcastle. I mean, unless Lukaku's made a far quicker return to action than we imagine, it'll be the same kind of personnel going to the northeast for that critical game then.
Simon, does the Club World Cup complicate things here for Chelsea in terms of how important this game is? They don't want a fixture pile-up, I suppose, later on in the year, and you know, Manchester City are just going to win the League Cup anyway, ultimately.
I have actually thought that the Cup should be called the Man City Cup. It should have it should be renamed. I mean, in many ways, the situation hasn't changed. You know, Chelsea knew that the League Cup and the Club World Cup was going to be an issue. It's just a different time now, where the fixture list is now going to be clashing with possibly the FA Cup as well.
And AFCON,
yeah, which is obviously something that Chelsea will be not so much Zayesh if he does make up with Morocco, but losing Mendy is significant. But anyway, yes, of course it's bottom of the list of priorities, but Tuchel was sort of commenting on this and said, essentially, I'm Chelsea manager, I can't pick and choose. I'm expected to win every game. So, yeah, it reminds me of Liverpool a couple of years ago, where they, if you remember, they sort of fielded a completely weakened side, and then the first choice team had to go off and compete. I like the League Cup, but it's when you're one of the top teams and competing on all fronts, it's very, very difficult to squeeze it in. And I think the FIFA Club World Cup is going to cause Chelsea a lot of headaches. Not so much with the League Cup, but I think with the Premier League and the issues it's going to have on the fixture congestion.
City always win the League Cup, though, so it can't be that much of a problem for elite clubs. Can it?
I know. I just think this season in particular, though,
just because you're in the Club World Cup, well, it's difficult, isn't it?
Well, it's the time away, isn't it?
What about for Southampton, Dom? Is this even less of a priority for them than it is for Chelsea? I'm just looking at the Premier League table, only 4 points above the relegation zone. They've only won once all season. Or do they think, well, this might be an opportunity for us to get a victory against what will be a reserve Chelsea team, but use that as a platform to go forward?
I think it's just a search for momentum, isn't it? It's a search for belief. And if they get any kind of result at Stamford Bridge, then they'll carry that into their weekend game at Watford. I mean, I don't think there's anything else. I don't think clubs like Southampton, and I can speak from experience here, clubs of that stature will be thinking about winning the League Cup, because everybody knows, as we've said 16 times in this, it basically one of the elite clubs always wins it, usually Manchester City. So it's just about belief and giving. Even Southampton will have fringe players that need game time. I mean, looking at the team that they played at Sheffield United in the previous round, there are plenty of players there that won't be featuring regularly in their Premier League team, not least the goalkeeper, Fraser Forster, played at Bramall Lane. So, you know, there's the similar issues in terms of wanting to spread out minutes over a squad, but it's just about belief. They need a win just as a fillip, really, and it would be beating Chelsea at the moment constitutes a massive boost for any club. It did for Manchester City when they won in the Premier League. It will for Southampton if they beat them in the League Cup, so I mean, that is the primary motivation, I'd imagine.
No extra time at this stage of the competition, so there's the possibility of another penalty shootout in this game. Kicks off 7:45 UK time on Tuesday. We will, of course, react to it in Thursday's pod.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Elsewhere in Chelsea news, Bethany England came off the bench to score for England as they beat Northern Ireland 4-0 in their World Cup qualifier at Wembley. Millie Bright and Frank Kirby started the game. England play Austria on Tuesday. Erin Cuthbert helped Scotland to a 2-1 win against Hungary at Hampden Park. Sam Kerr started for Australia. They beat Brazil in a friendly. And Jesse Fleming was on target as Canada beat New Zealand 5-1. In terms of the academy size, the under-18s involved in a right old ding-dong with Fulham in the under-18 Premier League South finished 4-all at Motspur Park. Edwin Anderson and Jude Soonsett-Bell both bagged braces. Soonsett Bell second. The final goal of the game, 5 minutes from time, means Chelsea are fifth in the table. The under-23s drew 1-1 at Leicester. Informed Brian Fiabema notched his fifth goal of the season in PL2 in that one. Just about done for today. Before we go, though, Dom, tell us a bit more about your piece on Zolt Lowe. You've profiled Thomas Tuchel's assistant for The Athletic.
Yeah, one of the assistant managers at Chelsea, Arnaud Michels being the other, the eighth person of Hungarian descent to have got his or her hands on the European Cup. Very much an integral member of Tuchel's backroom staff since 2018 when he came and joined him at Paris Saint-Germain after having basically worked through the Red Bull stable of clubs. He'd been at Frierling, he'd been at Salzburg and went to RB Leipzig and worked with Hasenhüttl and Rangnick there. And I think he does have quite an interesting role within that setup. I think Tuchel quite likes his assistants to speak up and query some of the decisions he makes and some of the ideas he's got. I get the impression that Zolt is particularly vocal on that front. He's also a bit of a confidant for the players. He's the one that sort of tries to get to know them on and off the pitch, tries to put them at ease. And I think they come to him with their issues and their problems and he's a good sounding board for them. So quite an integral member of quite a tight-knit, largely German travelling team that goes with around Tuchel's clubs. He's a Hungarian in the mix and he's made a very, very favourable impression at Cobham since joining the club.
Interesting, Simon, isn't it, that Anthony Barry and Joe Edwards have been kept on and are clearly quite valued as part of that team. You could understand them sticking around to kind of ease the transition from Lampard, but obviously Tuchel feels that they work well, not just with him, but with the likes of Zolt Lowe and the rest of the team who came from PSG and elsewhere.
Yeah, and don't forget that this is also Chelsea's modus operandi. They want domestic coaches to be part of the setup, so there's that sort of consistency, because you never know, it could all go wrong. Tuchel takes all his staff with him and you want that sort of that, you want that those guys that know the club inside and out to be there to work with the next guy. Usually it's a sort of more of a legendary figure like we've seen at Gianfranco Zola, Eddie Newton had a time, but these two are really respected coaches. Really respected coaches. Barry has come in and made a huge impact. Joe Edwards had a period where he was a little bit sidelined when Tuchel first took over, but he's now, he's a lot more noticeable, put it that way. So I think these guys make a real positive contribution to what's going on.
Be interesting to see what happens when Frank Lampard gets his next job, I suppose. Simon, are you on duty for the Southampton game?
I am. My third trip to the buffet in a week.
Zoom call is here. Maybe you're just closer to the camera side, but you just does seem to be having an effect on the old Zooms.
Shots fired. Ouch.
Dom's just bitter because, I miss the buffet. You know, he has to talk about mid-table football every week. But yes, we've had butter chicken we discussed last week. It was the English sort of little English breakfast on Saturday. That's not my favourite. So let's go back to some proper cuisine.
It's a rule you never talk about the press buffet at Chelsea. That is one of the rules.
I'm a rule breaker.
So you should know better.
I live on the edge.
Rebel. Yeah. Maverick.
I'm absolutely staggered to hear that an English breakfast is not on your regular list of must-eats. I thought it was good. I thought the sausage in particular seemed to be a really good quality one. You can often skimp on that. But
our listeners are not interested in this. I can guarantee
always falls
that.
Apart at the end of the show.
The producer's gone
it?
To sleep as well. Luce has gone.
Right, it's time for one of my gags.
Oh, no. Can we have a quiz instead?
Just to finish the show.
Thursday's quiz will be the other six people of Hungarian descent to get their hands on the European Cup, possibly. Simon, apart from buffet chat, what else is being dished up over on The Athletic from your brain / pen?
Well, not much for my brain, but we are obviously, me and Don, we're going to be looking ahead to the battle of the rich owners, although one is very much richer than the other, and just sort of putting it in the context of what perhaps Newcastle can learn from what Chelsea did or didn't do 18 years ago.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. Anyway, theathletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up. If you're not currently a subscriber, there is absolutely no buffet-based chat on there, so you'll be safe from that. We'll return on Thursday when we'll look back on Southampton and ahead to Newcastle. Until then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.